Good afternoon, Capital Tiger Bay members. Welcome to the Congressman Sutherland Gwen Graham debate. I am Club President Steve Burtman. Upcoming events, October 28th, Pulitzer Prize winner author Hedrick Smith will be here. Also, December 11th, Laughingstock, so make sure you get it on your calendars. Folks, for the integrity of the club, or the lack thereof, we are going to have a respectful debate. We will ask you to leave if you're caught cheering, jeering, or streaking. A lot has been made of the North Florida Way, and I, for one, a little unsure what it means. Does it mean living in a community with beautiful trees and white sandy beaches? Or does it mean having to drive to Jacksonville to get a cheaper flight? Our moderator, Washington Bureau Chief Carl Cannon, will help us get to the bottom of it. Carl, would you please come up and start the show?
Hello. I'm not going to give a lengthy introduction of these two debate opponents today. You know them better than I do. But I will say this much. I met them both this morning. Gwen Graham gave me a hug. She said, I'm a hugger. And when I tried to shake her hand, which I appreciate, I'm from California. In fact, wherever state you're from, when a pretty woman offers to hug you, the right answer is usually yes. The Congressman Sutherland actually pulled a pin out of my shirt. I'm wearing a new shirt that would have stuck me. I would have yelped up here. So I like them both already. And my title's moderator. That implies we'll have some moderation up here. But after meeting them, I don't think that's going to be a problem. We did a coin flip, and Gwen won. So she's going to go first. Our format, I'll just tell you very simply. Each of them is going to get a five-minute opening statement. Now, sometimes politicians go over 5 minutes, but I'll do my best to keep it to that, and I think they will too. Jeff Hendry here will be flashing them cards. Then there'll be a two-minute rebuttal by each of them, and then each will have an opportunity to ask a question of the other. Now, that's in the format. The campaigns have agreed to that. Then I'm going to start asking questions. But if during the course of it one of them wants to pose a question to each other, we're adults here. We're going to have a civil conversation, but it's not going to be a highly controlled conversation. So with that, could I invite you both up?
Are we supposed to do a handshake or something?
You know, I saw you guys already shake hands. If you want to do it right now.
Well, sure, for everybody here.
What about a hug?
You're up.
You ready for me to start? Where's the timer? I don't want to
He's
go
right
over.
He's right here, this handsome gentleman with...
Well, first, I want to just thank Tiger Bay. This has been a thrill to have the opportunity to come and speak before you all, and it appears that there's just a little bit of interest in this race. By the size of the crowd, and I'm sure a few of y'all in this room have seen some of the TV commercials. If you haven't, you're absolutely not watching TV. I got into this race over a year and a half ago. And the reason I got into this race is because I kept hearing over and over again how concerned people were with having a government that doesn't function. As I have traveled around this district for the last year and a half, I can tell you the people of the 2nd Congressional District of Florida, the North Florida Way, is caring about one another. It's about wanting to find reasonable common ground. It's about if you start from different positions, trying to find a way to find a common sense, reasonable solution that works well for both. That's what the North Florida Way is. It also may be having to drive to Jacksonville to get a cheap flight. So that's what I'm committed to doing. And it's been really perplexing to me because as I've driven around and talked with so many folks, thousands of people in this district, I found that that's the desire of what we want to get back to in our government and in our interaction with one another. It's natural human nature to want to care about one another. I've had the opportunity to meet Congressman Sutherland on multiple occasions, and you know what? I think he's a good man. I think he's a good man. We just have fundamentally different approaches to how you get things done in Washington. And it was concerning to me. I was driving down Appalachian Parkway one day when I heard a radio commercial come over the air. And it said, it was Congressman Sutherland speaking. I turned it up because, you know, I wanted to make sure I heard it very clearly. And he said, "I did not go to Washington to make friends." Well, in my world, and I think most of the people's world in this room, if you want to get things done, it's by building relationships and making friends. And I have a lot that I want to get done in Washington. I'm sure every single one of you spends your nights reading through the Graham Economic Plan. You can find it online at www.gwengraham.com. If it's already tattered because you've read through it so frequently, just go ahead and print out another copy. That's okay. But I have specific ideas for how we grow the middle class here in the North Florida 2nd Congressional District. I think we need to take advantage of what's most precious and what's most important here in North Florida, which are our people. We have 100,000 students here in North Florida. We need to be providing an opportunity for training at our community colleges that lead to good paying jobs so that they will stay here in North Florida once they graduate. We have veterans here, retired veterans that have such special skill sets. We need to provide a database of those skill sets so that when they are looking for jobs, we can line them up with the jobs that are available here in this district. We need to be providing tax breaks for small businesses. Right now, the large corporations are doing pretty darn well at the expense of small businesses. So we need to do that. And I commit to having someone on my team each and every day. I can't see you very well, so okay. Each and every day, who is doing nothing but talking with me and making sure that we're addressing the economic needs of the 14 counties in this district. So that's my priority. And how am I going to accomplish that? By going to Washington and making friends and building relationships, not only across the aisle. I don't care if someone's a Democrat, Republican, or independent. What I care about is, are you willing to sit down and let's talk about how we fix a Congress that only 10% of the American people think are doing a good job. And I, for the life of me, I don't know where those 10% are. So that's what my commitment is. That's what the North Florida Way is. And I look forward to a wonderful debate as we talk about the issues and how I'm committed to making a difference for the people here in the 2nd Congressional District. And I ask you friends in the audience and the friends across this district to recognize that that's the approach that will make a difference here in North Florida.
Steve? Thank you very much. I appreciate all of you. I appreciate the members of Tiger Bay and your guests here today for being here, being a part of this campaign. Gwen, I want to thank you for being a part and agreeing to debate. We have several times that we're going to do this, and I thank you. Today's crowd proves that in spite of all the attention we're getting around the country and all the pundits that we hear from, the people who live here, who work here, who make this place home care most about this race. You know, my family has deep roots in North and Northwest Florida. Over 200 years, my family has called this place home. My grandfather opened our family business over 60 years ago in Panama City with an honorable discharge and a sixth grade education and $3,000 of borrowed money, with a belief that if you work hard and you have honest dealings and you serve your community, you can build a better future for you and your children and grandchildren. And I'm the benefactor of that. You know, I carried those type principles with me to Washington to make sure that we would continue to work hard, tell the truth, and believe that everyone matters. You know, make no mistake about it. These are consequential times, difficult times. Job losses, healthcare challenges here at home, growing threats of terrorism, diseases. We see the news each and every day. This is a time for leaders, men and women who are willing to stand up for what is right, regardless of what party bosses or special interests would try to lean on you to say or do. I'm proud of the results we've achieved over the past 4 years. You know, when the Gulf oil spill devastated our coast, I worked with Republicans and Democrats to author and co-author the Restore Act. Our own senator, Bill Nelson, was on the same conference that I was appointed to produce a final product on the transportation bill that included the Restore Act to rebuild our local economies and our ecosystem. As the job market crumbled, I voted for the Skills Act to streamline job training programs, and I was also a part of the bipartisan conference that crafted the Farm Bill, which is incredibly important to North and Northwest Florida. I played a leading role in passing a water resources bill that creates jobs at our Florida ports. No state has more ports than Florida. And over 25% of all projects under the Water Resource Development Act will be performed right here in Florida, creating jobs for Florida's citizens. As expansive new EPA regulations threatened our regulatory balance, we passed a bill on the floor with 35 Democrats, over 10 co-sponsors to that piece of legislation that protects the partnership between the federal and state governments to make sure that common sense regulations hold true. You know, I'm proud of this record. This record represents the values that I think all of us cherish. But based on some of the TV ads that we've seen, I think today and perhaps going forward, you're going to hear a lot of things accusing me of things that just aren't true. They just aren't true. Many of these fraudulent claims have been disproven. So today, hopefully we can get into issues that matter most to you, that matter most to your children, that matter most to those that call North and Northwest Florida home. You know what? I lean back on those lessons of my youth growing up in our family business, taking care of others, loving people, men, women, children, educated, dropouts. Didn't matter the race, the gender. When people lose someone they love, they hurt. And everyone matters. I've taken that same belief to Congress. And so I will continue to do that as long as this district allows me to serve. And so, yes, I go to Washington, D.C. more than trying to get along in Washington, D.C., which being on a conference, being appointed to conference, proves that I have the ability to do that. But I'm there primarily to advocate for you. And so the point that I make today, no one in Washington, D.C. votes for me. You do. You do. And as long as you send me back, you will have no better advocate to fight for you, your children, your grandchildren, than Steve Sutherland. Thank you for having this debate today, and thank you very much for allowing me to be a part of it.
All right. Gwen, under the format agreed to by the campaign, you both applauded respectfully for both speakers, and that's great, but if we kept that to a minimum, would you get in more questions? And believe me, the questions are yours. I was emailed more questions than we have time for. I'm going to try and ask as many as I can. That was great. But let's move it along if we can. Under the format, you have 2 minutes of rebuttal. Mm-hmm. And then, Steve, you got 2 minutes. You didn't really attack each other, but that's the format, so let's stick to it.
Could I ask a favor? I can't really see the time, and so is there some way you could move more into the middle? Is that all right?
Yeah, I think that's maybe.
Jeff, you need to be
no,
right.
I know you are. That's why I said that. You're a very neutral timekeeper,
yeah.
Doing an excellent job. I
that's
just can't
good.
See you very well.
Is that better, Brian?
Is that okay?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jeff. First, I would like to concur with Congressman Sutherland's recognition that there is way too much outside money in this race. And the outside ads that are being run against me, there's not a single one of them that's true. And I'm sure Congressman Sutherland feels the same way. So one of the things we did agree upon in the last debate was that we needed campaign finance reform. We absolutely do. And I look forward to being someone who who advocates for getting back to a reasonable system where it wasn't the outside money that was controlling the airwaves, but the candidates who are able to put forth their message on TV themselves. And I will say I am really, really proud of the messages that I'm putting forward on TV, because that's what I believe and that's what I'm committed to doing in Washington. But back to Congressman Sutherland's comments about his actions in Congress. I am so committed to making sure that North Florida has the right type of representation. So as to the Restore Act, I'm proud of him for being involved in a bipartisan effort, but you know what? There's so much more that needs to be done. And Congressman Sutherland has not been willing to consider raising the damages cap for oil and natural gas companies. If we have another BP oil spill and the oil and natural gas companies are not willing to cover their damages, it's the coastline of the 2nd Congressional District that's going to suffer for that. In terms of the water resources bill, the number one thing that I would have had in that water resources bill would have been an amendment that would have given the downstream users in the Apalachicola River legal rights, because that's what Franklin County must have. And in terms of the Farm Bill, I'm glad the Farm Bill finally passed, but in fact, it was an amendment that Congressman Sutherland offered that was recognized nationally as being the reason that the Farm Bill did not pass initially, and it had been a bipartisan piece of legislation, and it was the farmers in North Florida that suffered last summer when we had such torrential rains. So I'm ready to go to Washington and make sure that I don't make decisions that hurt the people here in North Florida, but make the decisions that help the people here in North Florida.
Steve? Well, thank you, and these are two issues that are important to me. I would remind Gwen that the issue, the amendment she just proposed, would be a violation of the earmark ban. And so, therefore, that's not allowed. You see, there are rules in Washington, and right now we're operating under an earmark ban. The good senator would know that the Senate does not have that prohibition placed upon it. And so what we worked with in the bill, the water resources bill, is we worked with other colleagues on the other side of the Hill. We worked with Senator Jeff Sessions. We worked with Senator David Vitter. And the language that we think is going to be in the best interest of Franklin County and the ACF, the Apalachicola-Chattahoochee-Flint River System, is to make sure that if the three governors do not reach an agreement, that Congress shall weigh in to that issue, making sure that the Corps of Engineers understands, do your job or Congress will do it for you. Okay, I couldn't get that in on the House side, but I went on the other side of the Hill working with Senate colleagues to get that important language into the WERDA bill. So I'm very happy about that. Secondly, as far as the Farm Bill, you know, the chairman of the Farm Bill, the Ag Conference was Chairman Frank Lucas. He's the chairman of the Ag Committee. Frank came to the district. Frank was very clear that that Farm Bill would never have passed had it not been for my work on the Farm Bill to bring people together. My amendment that she made reference to, it was very similar. It was very clear. All we ask is for individuals who are of working age, mentally, physically, psychologically able to work, excluding children, excluding the disabled, and excluding seniors. All we ask is you do one thing. You either work 20 hours a week, train for work 20 hours a week, look for work 20 hours a week, or volunteer. You could deliver food with elder care, Meals on Wheels. And if you did so, if you're productive, if you're of mentally, physically, psychologically able to work, and of working age, then we will make sure you will not go hungry. That seems like common sense. And more people that I explain that to agree with that.
All right. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to make... Each of the candidates are going to ask the other a question. But before I do that, I want to make a quick announcement. Some of you, I notice, are taking out cell phones to take pictures. I've heard a ring or two. Make sure your devices are silenced. And I speak to you from experience. I once asked George W. Bush a question at Crawford at the ranch, and he hates this. And my cell phone went off while I was talking to him, while I was asking a question. It was a brand-new flip phone, and I didn't know how it worked, so I kept trying to turn the sound down. I made it louder and louder and louder. And finally, in my frustration, I threw it over my shoulder. The antenna landed in a cow patty. You don't have to know George W. Bush well to know this fits his sense of humor perfectly. And so I got off the hook that way. But there are no cow patties out there, so please
As far as we know.
Take your phones out. Steve, this is your chance to ask Gwen a question directly.
You know, early in this campaign, there was a lot of talk about fisheries. You know, I serve on the Natural Resources Committee. I serve on the Fisheries Subcommittee. And growing up in Panama City, I have fished for the red snapper my whole life. That's something that we all enjoy in North and Northwest Florida. I am curious as to Gwen in this question. There was a lawsuit filed against the National Marine Fisheries by 22 plaintiffs. The lawsuit was funded and bankrolled by the Environmental Defense Fund. You know, you attack me on wanting to increase our seasons, and you attack me on the methods that I've gone about in fisheries. And yet, you've received $50,000 from those 22 plaintiffs in that lawsuit that directly resulted in a 9-day snapper season. And already we're hearing talk about that resulting in no snapper season next year. So my question is, how can we believe your stance that you care about the coast and you care about all people fishing when you receive $50,000 from the 22 individuals who filed the lawsuit that resulted in a 9-day snapper season?
Well, this has become an issue that is near and dear to my heart, as I have gotten to know fishermen in the recreational section, in the commercial section, in the charter fishing section. A year ago, I went to a Gulf Council meeting. The Gulf Council is the entity that manages the Gulf fishing season. And what I heard there is so counter to what Congressman Sutherland just said. They're tired of the fighting. They're tired of the lawsuits. They want someone who's willing to be a peacemaker and find some solutions to this problem. Since the fighting has started, in fact, the snapper season has been going down. So we're clearly not going in the right direction. We need someone who's willing to work with all of the parties involved without taking a side and make sure that we're making common sense decisions so we don't have a red snapper season next year that's zero. I know that 9 days is not enough. I know that 9 days is not enough. So we need to have someone in place who's in a position to work together with the parties, work together with the Gulf Council, and increase our red snapper season next year. Congressman Sutherland's approach has not worked. My approach will.
Thank you. All right, now we're going to start these questions. And the format agreed to by the campaigns, which the Tiger Bay Club.
I think she gets to ask me a question, though.
That's right. You are fair-minded.
I'm here to bridge gaps. Right. Hey,
let him have it.
Congressman, can I come give you a hug?
Ask him a tough question instead.
After that hug comment, I feel a little guilty asking this question.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go. Woo!
Congressman, the shutdown of the federal government has been seen nationally as an abject failure of leadership. You are one of the few in Congress that voted not only to shut down the government to default on our national debt. How many days do you think it would have been that our government would have been shut down and people would not be being paid and our national parks would be closed and veterans would be hurt, people wouldn't be receiving their unemployment checks? How many days should that have gone on before you would have voted to open back up our government?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. And I'm used to being hugged and then, you know, being hit. But I will say, you know what, the government shutdown would have never occurred. Okay, had one of the three bills that I voted for leading up to the shutdown been considered by Harry Reid in the Senate, giving us an opportunity to avert a government shutdown. You know, I was one of 18 Republicans that went to the White House and met with the president. No cameras, no reporters. I know that was very painful for some of them.
For me, too.
But the president made it crystal clear. We were going into a shutdown. The president understood that with the agreements I'm sure behind the scenes, that the Republicans would be totally blamed in a time where his ratings were continuing to fall. He knew he needed something to blame the party that believes in smaller, more efficient government. And so therefore, the president and Harry Reid were determined that we would go into a government shutdown. And I guess that's the explanation as to why Harry Reid would not hear any of the three bills leading up to the shutdown and not hear any of the bills that we had passed to avert a government shutdown. And so, listen, I voted on creating a bipartisan work group to end the shutdown, and Harry Reid didn't want any of that either because it just didn't create enough pain, I think, that he wanted. And so I think my record's very clear. I didn't want that, and if I had wanted it, I would not have supported those bills to prevent it.
Thank you. All right, now, 90 seconds. I was going to ask a question about these ads. We'll get to that in a moment. It's obviously both on your minds, and I've been hearing about it ever since I landed.
Just a few of them.
Yeah, but let me ask, before we get to those ads, let me ask, Gwen raised an issue. You just addressed it, but I want to ask you a follow-up question, Steve, about it. You know, Sam Rayburn, the great House Speaker, used to say in Washington, to get along, go along.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new cadre of Tea Party-identified Republicans, people consider you in this group, who think that doesn't work. That's not the way it ought to be. And when you run an ad saying, I didn't go to Washington to make friends, you know, that plays into that idea. But I guess I would ask you what Gwen raised. Don't you have to have working friendships? Don't you have to cooperate to really get anything done in Washington?
Oh, absolutely. And in a spirit of cooperation, that's why I asked my good friend Marcia Fudge, who is the chairwoman for the Congressional Black Caucus. I asked her and invited her and 12 of her colleagues who are members of the Congressional Black Caucus to come to my apartment for a little reception. Just us. No media, no staff, no cameras. Just the Congressional Black Caucus to meet with about 15 other members on the Republican side. And you know what we did? We had a wonderful evening building relationships. That's like Jim McGovern. Now, if you know Jim McGovern, you know Jim to be one of the most liberal members of the House from Massachusetts. Jim follows food stamp issues, and I follow food stamp issues. And so Jim McGovern and I, well, we go and we have dinner together, just he and I. He's a delightful individual. And I will tell you, those relationships don't fit the narrative, though, that the mainstream media wants to have about me. They don't want to tell you those things. I will have to give credit to the Tallahassee Democrat, because the Tallahassee Democrat is the only publication that shared with the readers the story about my relationship with Jim McGovern. But other than that, it doesn't fit their narrative that I reach out and bring people together. If we didn't bring people together in very, very difficult times, our family wouldn't be in its third generation of funeral service in this district, period.
Gwen, let me ask you, one of the tropes out there in the campaign the Democrats are fond of is the war on women. And, you know, these candidates, this one here, they have wives, they have daughters, they want women to succeed in life. And now we look in the Middle East and we actually see what a war on women looks like. Mm. Is there any – shouldn't the Democrats be able to talk about their policy differences on with Republicans on women's issues without using such intemperate language?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Let me first say that I'm glad that Congressman Sutherland finally reached out in a bipartisan way, but that did not happen until 3 years into his term.
And that isn't correct.
And so I will be reaching out on day one and building those types of relationships that will benefit the people of this district. As to women, I have a daughter. She deserves to have the absolute equal opportunities in our society. I am disappointed in Congressman Sutherland for voting against the Violence Against Women Act. I am disappointed in Congressman Sutherland and for voting against the Paycheck Fairness Act. Sarah deserves to be paid equal with any man that's doing a job. So I don't think we should be framing this as a war on women. What I think we should be framing this as is an equality in this country that we all should expect for all. And that's what I believe we should be doing.
Congressman, when you were asked about – well, let me skip that. That said, the war on women, okay, it's a trope. It's over the top. But and you said – I think you told the local newspaper, I live with
five
women. So that's a good answer, but I have to ask you, I feel – an all-male fundraising event, you're right out of the gate, really? And in defense of this, you compared it to a lingerie shower. What were you thinking?
No. First of all, I think, listen, for Gwen to say that she wants her daughter to be paid as much as any man in the same job, I think you can respect the fact that I want Samantha, Stephanie, Allie, and Abby to be paid as much as well. I mean, for anyone to make the argument that I want them to have anything less than a successful career, okay, all my girls have been gainfully employed since the age of 15. That's a rule in our home. Work, you will be introduced to the blessing of work. It's not a penalty. It is a blessing. And so each one of them have been working, and they are doing extremely well. I will say I'm amazed that the same people that are quick to report a fundraising event where there were just solely men present fail to tell you that we've had 6 women's only events. Because, you see, that doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit the narrative. And so over the last several months, and well, even years, we have had women's only events to where we listen to issues that matter to them. What I'm amazed about is whether we're meeting with men or women, or whether we're meeting with veterans, or whether we're meeting with seniors, everybody cares about really pretty much the same things. They care about the economy. They care about the price of energy. They care about security. But let the record be straight. We have had more events with women than we have with men. So I think it's a false narrative.
So I couldn't draw you out on the lingerie comment. Dorothy Parker said lingerie is the soul of wit. But we'll go on.
We'll invite Dorothy.
There's a question for both of you. Answer it in any order that you want.
Okay.
You both talked about these ads, the tremendous amount of money that's been spent on the ads by outside groups. Let's use the outside groups for now.
We love them.
So you get – all right. So what would you say – or what would you respond to the complaints made about you, the accusations, the untrue charges – sort of clear the air, the ones that you hate the most. You got 90 seconds, so you can do 3 30-second ads. You can demolish them.
Awesome. This is the best. I'm excited about this. Who do you want to go first?
You go first.
Okay. I am not Nancy Pelosi. I am, neither am I Barack Obama or Harry Reid. I am Gwen Graham. And I am going to go to Washington and represent this district so incredibly well and represent all the counties in this district, 14 counties. And Congressman Sutherland mentioned about not having events that included men and women. We have not had a single event for this campaign that did not have men and women, because I believe we need to have men and women together at every event to hear all sides of what's going on in people's lives. That's what I hear as I'm doing work days across this district, that we need to come together, men and women, black and white, poor and doing well, and care about all of us. And that's what this campaign is about, and that's what I'm committed to doing. And if I could get off script for just a second,
yes,
I apologize.
That's all right.
I want to say something, because this is such an important issue to me. The Apalachicola River. After Congressman Sutherland said that it was an earmark that prevented him from offering that amendment, I got a legal opinion on that. The legal opinion said that it was absolutely not an earmark. For the lawyers in the room, and I mean no disparagement to the lawyers, because I know there's a lot of them, but you know you can get many, many opinions that are different from different lawyers. I will look for the opinion that allows me to do the right thing for the people of this district, and the right thing would have been to offer that amendment to help the people of Apalachicola.
Steve, can I ask you, is there one charge made in these outside ads that's really gotten under your skin and you'd like to respond to? This would be the time.
Well, I mean, clearly. I mean, this week, the accusation that I voted to keep the gym membership open. I mean, does... I mean, really? Now I'll follow my sword over the buffet line downstairs. But I mean, come on. I mean, but no, listen, and I agree with Gwen in that, look, there's too much money that is poured into this race. I want you to know that 74% of all of my individual contributions into my campaign, 74% have come from the men and women who live in Florida's 2nd Congressional District. However, the opposite of that is true for my opponent. 74% of her individual contributions have come from people who live outside of Florida's 2nd Congressional District. So I don't agree with all the money, and I really disagree with any system where someone can come into Florida too and undermine the elective process that we determine, people who live here, work here, retire here, that we are the people to send our representative to Congress.
Let me ask you both then. Should candidates who object to these outside ads do more to disavow them because they're being aired on your behalf, just as they're being aired to attack each other?
Well, actually, I hope you remember this, Congressman. You and I had an opportunity to talk at the Possum Festival. And at the Possum Festival, I said to you, let's stand together and let's disavow these outside negative ads. Let's ask them not to come into this district so that the people of the 2nd Congressional District can have an opportunity to hear what we stand for and not be barraged with all these negative outside ads. He said he would get back to me. Is now the time?
No, that's not what I said.
Yes, sir.
It's not.
Go ahead, Steve.
No. At the time of the Possum Festival, which we both got lambasted by PETA for being a part of.
That's true. And I was this far away from getting the Humane Society endorsement.
No, I said at the time, I said, well, here's your chance to practice some real leadership, Gwen. You see, the negative ads against her had not started yet. If you remember, it was the Democrats who went up first on television. So I, at that time, was the only one being bashed and berated and falsely accused for a record that I've been proud of. And so I said, listen, I'm the only one that is being hit. So here's your chance. You wanna practice some leadership? I'm the only one getting banged up right now. Do the right thing. So it didn't happen.
I think everybody in this room, and look, Congressman, you and I were the only two there at this conversation. I think everybody knows that the negative ads were coming, and it would have been the right thing to do together, because we would have been an example for the entire nation of what a congressional race should be about, which is about what you stand for. And unfortunately, it becomes these attack ads that people see so constantly. And I want to apologize as someone that's contributing to your barragement. That is such a scourge on our democracy, and we've got to have a change.
I agree.
Gwen, you said you're not Nancy Pelosi.
I am not.
But I'm going to ask you a question about Nancy Pelosi, who I know. She's from my hometown of San Francisco. I've known her since she was an aide to a county supervisor.
Sorry, I keep messing with this thing.
And are you all right with that? Is that?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I'm just so tall, I have to figure out a way to...
The Republicans are having fun going around the country asking Democratic senatorial candidates if they voted for Barack Obama. Kind of a cheap shot in my view. But what a question I'm about to ask you is relevant, and I'm going to ask you a similar question, Steve. Would you vote for Nancy Pelosi to be House Speaker if the Democrats took over, a job she wants to have, or Majority Leader if they don't, and you were elected to Congress? Would you vote for her to keep her in that position?
No, I would not, and this is why. I believe we need to have new leadership on both sides of the aisle. The leadership that we have today has become so polarizing and so politicized that I'm not blaming either of them. It's just the reality. And so we need new leadership that Democrats and Republicans feel comfortable working with so we can start getting things done for our country again. So that's going to be my criteria when I have the opportunity to vote for a leader. Who is someone that can actually work across the aisle and get things done for our country again?
Steve, do you believe House Speaker John Boehner is deserving of his position in leadership? And would you vote, if you were reelected, would you vote to have him continue as the Republican leader in the House?
Well, because I'm there and I am a part of the conference, I know that you can't replace somebody with nobody. You just can't. And I know that there is no one that is mounting a challenge to John Boehner. And so, therefore, the chances are very likely, the first week of January, that we will go to the floor and you will have two choices. One choice will be perhaps John Boehner, and I think there's a very good likelihood that that's going to happen. And the other choice will most likely be Nancy Pelosi. And I've made it crystal clear, I will never vote for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House, ever. I just won't. And if John Boehner is the one running for Speaker of the House, then I will vote for John Boehner over Nancy Pelosi. Now, currently, Carl, there is no one in our conference that is stepped up saying that I want to be Speaker of the House. And so, you know, I have to deal with what I know. And I've had conversations with these individuals who have been mentioned as a possible. And whether it's Jeb Hensarling or Jim Jordan or they just say no. They have small children. They don't want that job. To travel 300 days a year, they don't want that job.
Gwen, I'm going to follow up on this, so, if you don't mind. Sure. Steve, but if the Republicans lost the House, now everybody says that's unlikely. Real Clear Politics says that's unlikely. All the pundits say it's unlikely. But I'm trying to understand where your allegiances are in the House.
Sure.
Would you vote for John Boehner for Majority Leader, or would you be looking for new leadership the way Gwen is in your own caucus?
Well, I don't see this being I don't see the House Republicans. Let me share some statistics with you to really shed light on where the problem is, because I think this is it's a false choice here. I mean, listen, just this year alone, or just in this Congress alone, the House has passed 418 bills. The Senate has passed 211. The President has signed 88 House bills. He has signed 36 Senate bills. The House has passed 7 appropriations bills. The Senate has passed 0. The House has accepted 215 amendments. The Senate has accepted 0. So the mainstream media may want to try to convince you, along with the Democrats, that the House is the problem. The proof that is shown in the congressional record is that it is Harry Reid and the Democrats.
Gwen.
Can I respond to that?
Well, I'm going to say, among the things that you're not, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, you're not running for the Senate either, are you?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Why don't you respond
to
that, and then I'm going to ask you a question about your own campaign.
Well, first, for all the mainstream media here, I really like y'all. You're all great. What Congressman Sutherland just said is exactly what the problem is. We have a broken Congress. Senate, House of Representatives, they're not working together. We need new leadership. We need new leadership across the board in Congress in order to start getting things done again. I look forward to being part of that change.
Now, you're both running against each other. You're making your best argument. But let me ask you to put on your journalist hat, or maybe, Steve, you don't seem to be enamored of the mainstream media.
Not really.
Your political science hat.
I like you all.
And
they're a newspaper family.
Yeah. Well, I'm from a newspaper family too. So, let me ask you both honestly: what can your party do, not the other party? What can your party do to get away from the gridlock, to alleviate the gridlock in our political system, in Washington and elsewhere?
That actually is the most important question. And I think what our party can do is elect people like myself who don't care what party someone's in and are willing to go to Washington and work with Democrats, Republicans, and independents, bring people together again. We used to have a government that functioned well. I grew up with one of the greatest role models in the world. He's known me for 51 years and 9 months. And I know that we can have a government that functions well. Look, a campaign is a contact sport. Congressman Sutherland and I are going through it right now. I like him, but it's a competition. When the competition is over, you put that aside and you do the right thing for the people that elect you. And that means finding compromise. And that's what I'm good at. I'm a people person. I'm a hugger, as you know. I'm a people person. I'm someone that wants to find common ground. I'm someone that wants to find a way to work out a fair solution to the challenges that our country faces. And when I go to Washington, that's what I'm going to be doing. It's going to take one person at a time, replacing someone who's not been willing to do that with someone who is. And I'm going to be one of that, one part of that change.
Steve, what could the Republican Party do? Not the Democrats, the Republicans, your party, to help ease the gridlock in our political life?
Well, I think clearly, you know, the call for cooperation is necessary. You have to work together. But I also understand that if you and I agree on everything, one of us isn't necessary. And so, therefore, you know, I think differing ideas is a positive thing. And by the way, listen, you don't get appointed, and the senator knows this, you don't get appointed to a conference to go in and blow up a bill. You get appointed by your leadership to go into conference with colleagues on the other side of the Hill to work together. And I'm very proud that in 3 years, my first 3 years that I served and represented you, I was appointed to a conference twice that approved major legislation that were in the best interest of the American people, the transportation bill and the farm bill. And I got to tell you, you just don't get appointed to that process if you can't work together with other people of differing views. The proof is in the pudding. The proof is in the congressional record book. In spite of what the mainstream media tells you and what the Democrat tells you, it's just. And so I think that you can overplay your hand. And I think in politics, both Republicans and Democrats have overplayed their hand. Listen, I wouldn't be a member of Congress right now if Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi, and Harry Reid did not overplay their hand in the 111th Congress and ram through pieces of legislation that hurt the American people. Bad process leads to bad law. And we saw that evident in the 111th Congress.
Okay, Gwen, you talked briefly before and about the North Florida Way. Mm-hmm. It's in your campaign literature. Steve Burtman talked about it in his opening remarks whimsically. But
right.
I've sort of always assumed it meant, you know, and some of my table mates told me, you know, it kind of means fiscal, not conservative, being rational fiscally. Mm-hmm. That means you're not like the Pelosi Democrats. And moderate socially, which means you're not like the House Republicans. Do I understand that right? Tell me why you think you're more.
Yes. I think it means a lot more than that. Indeed, I am a fiscal conservative. I believe we need to have a balanced budget. We believe we need to protect Social Security and Medicare and all services related to our veterans who have served our country so admirably. But I believe in the power and the goodness of people. And I think that's really what the North Florida Way is. And that's why it was so concerning to me to hear Congressman Sutherland say that he did not go to Washington to make friends, because that's not exemplifying the North Florida Way. The North Florida Way is making friends, building relationships, so that you can accomplish things like getting our deficit under control. Until we have a Congress that's willing to, quite honestly, enact the North Florida Way, we're not going to be able to get anything done. So again, one person at a time. I'm not naive. Look, I know I go to Washington, I'm going to hug my way through the Congress. But I recognize I'm just one person. I'm one person advocating the change that needs to be made. But I am going to be a strong voice. I'm going to wake up every day. And I'm going to make sure that all of my fellow members of Congress know that what we've been doing in the past is unacceptable for the American people. We have to have a change. We have to start working together again. And if we do that, we're going to be doing the job that the American people elected us to do.
Steve, do you want to take 30 seconds on that? Because then I want to ask you about the economy and some foreign policy questions, both of you.
I'm taking notes over here, so I apologize.
The North Florida Way. Are you the guy? Are you too conservative socially? I mean, how is that you?
Listen, I mean, when your family's been here 200 years, there's not a whole lot that people can teach me about the Northwest Florida Way. And part of being in this region, you know that we have more than just one region. It's not just North Florida. It's Northwest Florida. I mean, we got two time zones in Florida, too. And the people of North Florida get representation. But so do the people of Northwest Florida. And so being here as long as our family has been here, I get that. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were at the Williams family reunion. It's only been around for 125 years. It's the oldest family reunion in America. That's our roots. That's who we are. I know this district. But more importantly, this district knows me. And this district knows that I will go and I will fight for them to make sure that faith, family, and hard work, a system of earned success where you're rewarded for your merit, your effort, your willingness to sacrifice, and your willingness to serve your community will be rewarded rather than penalized. That is the North and North Florida way.
I now want to ask you a series of questions. Let's start with an immediate foreign policy crisis. The ISIS, the threat posed by the Islamic State. Do you think each of you, and do you think that the President and Congress have addressed this properly? Do you think they're doing enough? What is your position on what our policy ought to be? Why don't you start?
I, as a mom, I've been devastated by what I've seen overseas. The President was way too slow to respond to this crisis, as was the Congress. We now have a situation internationally that is potentially very, very dangerous to the United States of America. I support what Senator Bill Nelson has proposed. I support the airstrikes that are going on right now. I support arming the rebels. But I think we need to also recognize that there may come a time when we're going to have special forces, as Senator Nelson has said. We need to be prepared to defend America at all costs. And if we hear, if there's any intelligence that indicates that America might be under attack, we need to take immediate action. I think the Congress needs to be ready to go back and make the decisions that the Congress should be making to make sure that America is in the right place to deal with this threat to our country, the potential threat to our country. But as a mom, I can't even imagine what the mothers and the families of those men who have been so atrociously beheaded publicly, how they must be feeling. It is atrocious, it is appalling, and we have to be in a position to stop it.
Steve, do you disagree with any of that?
No, I the same bill that she made reference to with Bill Nelson, I voted for. I know that doesn't fit the narrative by some. But I believe that the President needed until December the 11th to build a coalition. How can you go out and try to build a world coalition when your own country is not a part of that coalition? And even though I've disagreed with President Obama on many issues, I have to be fair. And when he and Secretary of State are traveling around the world trying to create a coalition, because this is a world problem, he must be able to say that America stands unified and we are a part of that coalition. And so the resolution that we passed before we returned home gave the President the authority for airstrikes, gave the President the authority to go and speak on behalf of the American people to build a coalition. When we return back to D.C., we will learn more about the progress being made. We are having conference calls now, briefings now, to let us know the progress that is being made, and then we will talk about going forward. I will say this, when the President says to our enemies, we under no conditions will provide boots on the ground, that's like Jimbo Fisher on Thursday telling the opponent, Notre Dame this weekend, we will not run defensive plays. We just won't run defense. It's just going to be offense, no defense. You don't take options off the table. You may not implement those options, but you don't take options off the table. The element of surprise is important in war.
Steve, how about the Ebola crisis? Do you think the medical community and the administration in this country has handled this crisis properly?
Look, this is Ebola. It's kind of like dealing with anything that's fast and you can't see it, it's like electricity. Proceed with caution. Look, as someone who has been in funeral service, we believe and practice universal precautions because we never know what the cause of death was. Ebola is a very serious issue. I believe we are totally within our right to prevent travelers, civilian travelers, from coming from those Western African nations into this country until we know for sure, without question, that they do not carry the Ebola virus. I was bothered this morning, as I'm sure many of you were, that we now know the second healthcare worker in Dallas has contracted Ebola. I think that, look, and I'm pleased that the Congress that I voted yes for earlier in the year, that we increased funding to the CDC by 8.2%. It's not a funding issue. It's taking this issue seriously and practicing universal precautions. And I think that we have to practice, we can't be safe enough here.
Gwen, the administration has said that it doesn't want to restrict flights from West Africa because it would complicate the relief efforts. But 13 other countries have done so. We now have 1,000 people coming from Sierra Leone and Liberia a week. Do you think the administration has not been prudent enough? What is your view?
I agree with Congressman Sutherland. The number one priority is to protect Americans here. And until we have this situation under control, I do not believe we should be allowing people to come into this country who have traveled to country where Ebola is in such an outbreak position. I do think we should quarantine them, make sure that they are free and healthy before we let them back into the country. That just makes sense. As the fear of Ebola outbreak here in America grows, we need to be taking every step that we can to make sure that we're protecting the American people here, and that seems like a reasonable step to take.
Gwen, let me ask you a related question, and Steve, weigh in after. What is your view of the border? Is the administration, is U.S. policy adequate on the border? What should be done with the thousands of people still coming here without papers? I won't use the word illegal aliens. But what should our policy be?
Well, Congressman Sutherland, this was one thing there were two things we agreed on in the last debate. One was campaign finance reform, and the other was the need to secure our borders. We absolutely need to first make sure we secure our borders. But I believe that the Congress has really failed in its responsibilities by being unwilling to take up a comprehensive immigration reform law. This is something that across our country has bipartisan support. The Chamber of Commerce recognizes this is something we need to do for economic reasons. As I have traveled around this district and met with so many law enforcement officers, they are dealing with serious domestic violence, but people that are subjected to domestic violence are afraid to come forward to law enforcement. See, there goes my mic again. Are afraid to come forward because they're afraid of being deported. This is an issue we need to deal with as a country, and I hope the next Congress is willing to take it up, the Senate and the House, and provide some comprehensive immigration reform. It's been too long. We kicked the can down the road enough times, and it's time for Congress to do its job. And I look forward to being part of the Congress that will actually get some progress on this issue.
Steve, can you take mind 1 minute on immigration?
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Look, I think the House Republicans told the world the last day of July our position on border. If you know, before we left to come home for the August work period, on a Thursday, we didn't have a border bill to address the children that were flooding over the southern border. And so what we did is we pulled our bill, we canceled our flights on Thursday and Friday, and late Friday night we put a bill on the floor that sealed the border. We didn't increase new debt, new deficits. We took the money to fund that bill out of the president's budget and out of foreign aid from the countries in Central and South America that were creating the problem. We took the children, and in a caring and compassionate way, we clean them, we clothe them, we feed them, but we immediately return them home to the country of origin they came from to be reunited with their families. And so, therefore, we passed that bill late on a Friday night and then flew out back to our districts the next morning on Saturday morning. But what happened in the Senate? Well, Harry Reid voted down their bill on Thursday, quick enough to catch all their flights out of Reagan International Airport to fly back home to their districts. My wife, Susan, who gets involved very little in this process, told me, "You do not come home unless you address the atrocities going on the border. Do your job. And what did the president do? He took those children and he scattered them now to the four corners of this country. And we already know they have diseases and illnesses that could affect the American people. Border security is not an immigration issue. It's a security issue. And when people come across that border, I want to know who they are, where they're going, and what they're doing.
Okay. Steve, one thing I'm hearing from you tonight, today, is that you missed not having Bob Graham in the Senate, apparently. Can I say that?
I think Senator Graham served with great distinction, and I have acknowledged that throughout this entire campaign, and so I do so again publicly, Senator, and as well as Governor. One thing I've learned as I've traveled through this district, you have a good name, and you've represented our state well, and so yeah, I think you could bring a lot of common sense over to the House that when you left seemed to go into disarray.
Gwen, what is your opinion? What is your official view of the Affordable Care Act? Does it need to be repealed, fixed? If so, if how fixed?
Well, first I want to thank the congressman for recognizing my dad and my mom. They're a partnership. They wouldn't have been able to do it without each other. So, yeah. Thank you. I have been consistent from the beginning. I believe that the Democrats bit off far more than they could chew when they enacted the Affordable Care Act. And I agree with the congressman. It should not have been done, and it should not have been just shoved through without any bipartisan support. But I also think that it has been wrong of the Republicans to vote 54 times to return our health care into the hands of insurance companies. As I've traveled around this district, I've talked to so many people who have benefited from the Affordable Care Act, who have children, who have sisters and brothers and spouses, who but for the Affordable Care Act, well, quite honestly, it was a life or death issue because they had a pre-existing condition and they could not get health care. So we need to look at the affordable health care, keep the reforms that are working well, and look at the parts that are not serving the people of North Florida well, and make the changes that need to be made. 54 times voting to repeal it at a great cost to the American people has not accomplished their goal. What it has accomplished, it has kept a law in place that has problems and needs to be fixed. I look forward to going up there, working across the aisle, in addressing the parts of that law that are not working well for the people of North Florida.
Steve, I'm running out of time here, but if you, because we know how you have voted on this, but 30 seconds on it, could you do 30 seconds?
Listen, of those times we voted to repeal parts of it, 10 of those votes have resulted in passage in the Senate and signed by the president. So there is a recognition that there are things that need to come out. And I'll tell you, I can't, I said this earlier in the debate, that bad process leads to bad law. Bad process leads to bad law. This law was passed after midnight with no bipartisan agreement. It's like ready, shoot, aim. The North and North Florida way is ready, aim, shoot. And I got to tell you, when 300,000 Floridians lose their coverage, when premiums are expected to rise over 13% next year, when Medicare Advantage cuts of $1,400 per Florida senior are going to go into place, that's not acceptable.
All right. Well, let me.
That's just not acceptable.
Let me ask you. So the House voted to repeal it. Whatever happens in the Senate, there's not going to be votes to. There are not going to be votes in the Senate to repeal it.
I think we've established that.
And even if there were, the president would veto it. So let me just ask you this. One reform. President Obama calls you up. I like that you met with those members of the Democrats.
Sure.
Steve, I'm told you're a man who will listen. One reform, one change to the law.
Right.
What would it be?
Well, I would say allow Senator Harry Reid to have the bill that I co-sponsored that refused insurance companies from being allowed to kick people off their policies for pre-existing conditions. I am a co-sponsor of that bill. Okay? And I would say to the president, President, make a phone call to Harry Reid. And I hear y'all don't get along very well, President, but make a phone call to Harry Reid and tell him to put that bill to make sure that people with pre-existing conditions are protected.
Can I respond to that?
Please.
I was the only Democratic challenger in the entire country that supported the Republican Keep Your Health Plan Act, because I believe the president made a promise that if you had a health care plan that you liked, you could keep it. And I believe if you make a promise, you keep that promise. So, Congressman, I would have supported the bill that you put forward.
All right. Let me go back to the environment for a minute. Climate change and the risk of toxic pollutants are a big focus of the Obama administration, which this summer announced new emission standards specifically for coal-fired power plants, electrical plants. Could I ask each of you now in 90 seconds, how would you weigh the cost-benefit ratio in that policy? Are higher energy costs, especially for small business and households, worth the benefit of cleaner, healthier air?
Well, first of all, I do believe in science. And I believe that we do have a problem with climate change. 97-98% of scientists believe that we do. But I'm a believer in all of the above approach to energy. I think we need to be exploring all different sources of energy for our country. And Florida is the Sunshine State. So we should be a leader in solar energy. There are many things that we should be doing in Florida to make sure that we contribute to energy independence, which I think is something our country desperately needs to move towards. We have what's most precious to Florida, clean water, clean air. That's what I will be committed to, making sure that the votes that I take in Washington make sure that what's most precious here in Florida, and particularly in a district where we have some of the most pristine, beautiful coastline in the entire state of Florida, stays that way.
Steve?
Well, I mean, if you address this issue, the president made it very clear when he came to Congress that he was going to make sure that coal-fired power plants were going to close. Now, I serve on the Natural Resources Committee, and so it is an area of jurisdiction that I see each and every day. And for the president to come in and say, we're just going to put you out of business, okay, and not talk about the unintended consequences, seniors whose Medicare Advantage is going to go up $1,400, whose medicines are going up, what is that going to do to your power bills as well? Again, ready, shoot, aim. There's a pattern here by this administration. It's their way or the highway. I've talked to my Democratic colleagues that are furious at this administration. The president doesn't come to the Hill. He ignores Congress. He ignores a co-equal branch of government. And nowhere does he do that more than on this issue regarding plants. I believe that there are common sense retrofitting to our power plants and to all plants that with common sense and a fair way to implement those measures can be done to protect the environment without crushing the economy and the families who require those jobs to put food on the table. And so, but this president, it's his way or the highway. And I we've seen that over and over again. And I surely see that while I'm in committee and shedding light on this issue.
All right. This is my penultimate question.
I'm excited.
All right. Yeah. You're on the elevator with the president. Unguarded. That happened. The guy had a gun.
Yeah. The guy was actually had a gun.
And a felony record. But so let's say you're unarmed. I don't think either of you have felony records.
Yeah.
You're on the elevator with the President of the United States, and he says, I'll start with you, Steve. He says, Steve, I know you're Republican, but I could use one idea from you. Now, this is a 30-second answer, not a 90-second answer. How can I lower the federal deficit and address the federal debt? What's the one thing I could do, Steve? Barack Obama to you.
Now, sir, it's very simple. I don't have to pray about this, President. This is pretty simple. Get the departments out of the way and allow the creativity of the American people to flourish, to thrive. Allow them to risk. Do not penalize them for reward. That's simple, President. Create an environment where job creators do what job creators do. Sir, I think the door is open and this is your floor.
Okay. Gwen, your elevator pitch to the President of the United States, how to address the deficit and the debt.
Well, I'm assuming that Secret Service wouldn't stop me, but I would first give him a hug. And I would tell him that I have been disappointed in his leadership, that I believe he needed to be working more with Congress and maybe giving more hugs. But I would suggest that he take a hard look at the General Accounting Office report, which is put out every year. And as I understand, it's quite a lengthy document. And in that report, there are example after example after example of unnecessary spending by the federal government, and we need to take a hard look at that. I would say put that whole thing on the table. Let's go through it line by line, and let's cut the spending that we don't need to be spending, President. And then I would give him another hug.
All right. Here's my last question, and then after that, after the candidates answer, they're going to each give a closing statement. And before we even come to my last question, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of being here and doing this. I think the Tiger Bay Club is one of the great things in North Florida. The ads, the attack ads are the bad thing. This is the good thing about a campaign. And in that spirit, I moderated a conversation between Karl Rove and Robert Gibbs, and he was the communications director at the White House, about this time exactly in the calendar 2 years ago. And they were going around the country, and they were debating each other. And I asked them, I surprised them, but I actually surprised myself by the answer I got. The answer was very, was good. It was nice. I asked them, what about the other person did they like the most? And you two haven't been traveling together in the same airplane, so maybe I'll change it a little bit. Start with you, Steve. What do you respect most about Gwen Graham? And then, Graham, I'd ask you to do the same.
Okay.
That's easy. And it's easy because it's true. I am not here because of my own advancements and my own abilities. I am standing here today because of Steve and Mary Sue Sutherland, that haven't gotten much press in this campaign, but they are the most incredible people that I've been privileged to grow up in their home. They've taught me, they've mentored me, they've cared for me, they've always made sure my needs were met, and I got some wants as well. But my dad taught me the importance of faith, the importance of family, loving my mom. And the greatest gift that a father could give to his children is to love their mother with all of his heart, mind, and soul. And I believe when mothers and fathers do that, the children grow up and do what I think Gwen's done. You want to honor your mother and father all the days of your life. And Gwen, I will say, you honor your parents. I see you speak affectionately about them. I see the twinkle in your eye when you look at them, and I see the same thing in their eyes to you. And having been one who enjoys that same type of love and respect and desire to care for, I recognize it. I respect it. I commend you for that, and I commend the people that are most responsible for that, Mr. and Mrs. Graham.
Thank you. Well, Congressman, I look forward to meeting your parents. I haven't had the honor yet.
You will.
And I'd
like that.
And I see in you the same that you've expressed about my parents. And that's exactly what I was going to say to you. I grew up in a family of four girls. I have three younger sisters. They like to constantly point out that I am, in fact, the oldest sister. And what I see in you, and I see with you with your four daughters and your wife, you're a wonderful family man, and I can see that love that you have for your daughters and for your wife. And even though this has been a bit contentious at times, kind of off to the side where we've tried to without the cameras, Congressman Sutherland and I have had a chance to talk to one another. And I do believe at the end of this, and I know this because he and I have talked, we are going to be friends. And we're going to support one another in the best interest of the people here in North Florida. And so that is a very, very wonderful place to be. And all of you in this room and all those across the 14 counties in North Florida will be the beneficiaries of that.
Now,
thank you.
It's now time for closing statements. Steve, why don't you go first?
Sure. You know, at the end of the day, It really doesn't matter what the outside groups say about either one of us. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes it really doesn't matter what we say about each other. What this election about is not us. This election is about you. Making sure that you have access to the American dream. You know, for the 3.5 years that I've been fortunate enough to be in Congress, coming to the end of my second term, I've tried to make sure that everything I did really supported the underpinning of three things that I think matter. That each and every day I make sure that every action I take underscores the significance of every individual. Everyone matters. Just like at our little funeral home growing up, everybody mattered. When you would see someone over on the side of the room, kind of the family member standing off away from the rest of the family, you would go over to them because they mattered. They needed to be a part of this family experience. So you would go, you would embrace them. You'd love them and care for them because they mattered. I take that to Congress. Everyone there matters because they represent 700,000 Americans that matter. The second thing I've made sure that we've done is to fight to make sure that every family is secure, that your children grow up in a secure environment. To accomplish the third thing, that I believe in the strongest America possible. And I believe that to be the strongest America possible, we have to have the best economy possible. We have to have the safest borders possible. And we have to have the finest men and women that stand in defense of this country possible. And when America is the best country possible, the world is a safer place. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to be with you today. I thank Carl. I thank Gwen. I thank everyone that's here today. This campaign has been an amazing experience. America is an amazing place. Thank you for being a part of this process, being engaged. God bless you all, and may God continue to bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Gwen.
It has been an amazing experience. I've been in this race now for over a year and a half, and I have loved every single day. Sometimes people look at me and they go, "What is wrong with you?" But it has been incredible. And the opportunity to meet so many people and to be in a position to help so many people is the only reason that I ran for this seat. I believe that the way you get things done is by building relationships and building friendships. And in Washington, D.C. today, that is unfortunately sorely missing. But I, from day one on this, when I'm elected and had the honor, if I have the honor of serving, I will go to D.C. I will reach across the aisle. I will build relationships with those that can help the people here in the 2nd Congressional District. My first phone call, if I'm fortunate enough and blessed enough to be elected, is going to be to Jeff Miller in District 1 and Congressman Yoho in District 3, because we should be working together as those that most care about the panhandle of Florida. So I commit to you that I will bring the North Florida way to D.C. I will make sure that I'm building the relationships with those agencies that can help Florida and can help me implement the Graham Economic Plan, which is a common sense plan to build the middle class here in North Florida. That's what we need. We need to build opportunity for all. And that's what I'm committed to doing when I'm in Washington, D.C. And I want to thank Congressman Sutherland. This has been a wonderful, wonderful debate. I want to thank all of you here in this room. I want to thank Carl. And I look forward to the next, 20 days, Congressman? 20
yes.
days. I can give you the hours, seconds, and minutes. And I'm hopeful that on November 4th, we will be celebrating a victory. And I also know that it will be an opportunity to come together, Congressman Sutherland and I, whoever wins this race, and make sure that whoever's the next congressman in this district is in the best position to serve all of us. And that's what we will do. Thank you so much. And thank you to Congressman Sutherland.
Thank you.
I know I was stifling you now. Now you can clap for both of them. On behalf of the Tiger Bay Club, I thank you both. Good luck.